And I'm talking to Frans Grenier this evening. Now, the Frans Grenier I know is a very burly ex-policeman who runs the South African Institute of Race Relations. This Frans Grenier is less burly and a lot younger, and he works in the world of artificial intelligence, not business intelligence, and his business is called Data Profit. But you, Frans Grenier, are related to Frans Grenier.
Yes, that's correct. Absolutely. He's a cousin.
He is a cousin. And in your family, he's just got a small database of first names.
There are a couple of Frances in the family. There's a grandfather as well.
Oh, my word. Yeah. Okay. So the family tree must be an absolute nightmare. Now, listen, Data Profit, being able to see the future, I suppose, and that's what artificial intelligence that you've harnessed enables you to do. Tell me about the profit part of this, as in the PH rather than the FIT part of profit.
Right. Yes. So certainly with data, all we're trying to do is inform the next best decision you make. Much as humans, when you go and look at a process and you say, what is the thing I should do next? Should I write an email? Should I make this change? You're thinking through something, and you're thinking through something given all the information you have, and you want to make a change to something. Right?
Okay. So in the real world, we go into a factory,
yes,
and we've got a widget-making machine, and it makes the same widget a million times over.
Except sometimes when it doesn't.
Right. And that's the point. So explain to me, in this real world environment, how your software enables me to predict that something's about to go horribly wrong before it goes wrong.
Right. So when we go and look at a factory, there's a vast quantity of information coming off one of these factories. You can imagine kind of an assembler of a vehicle, and they've got a series of robots. And that you start with just all the parts behind the vehicle, and you end with this finished vehicle. But all of those robots have some knowledge as to what they're looking at and what they're seeing. But they're still affected by kind of the real world, right? And where this becomes kind of really interesting is, you know, today's temperature is a little bit warmer. So that robot moves a little bit further to the left or a little bit further to the right.
Because the hydraulic fluid the viscosity is impacted.
Contracted, yes. Exactly, mm-hmm. Right? And so how do you account for that? And this is where all of that kind of data really helps us improve the process, is to say, actually, because today is a little bit warmer, we're going to slow down the rotation or we're going to speed it up, right? But if you look, and you can think of these manufacturing plants as a single machine almost, but they've got 10,000 or 100,000 data points. And for a human to look at all of that data just becomes too difficult.
And so what you do then is you improve the production process in a factory, for argument's sake, whether it be a bottling plant at AB InBev to ensure that exactly the right amount of liquid is put into a bottle, the cap is put on the same way a million times over this week to ensure that the packaging happens and they don't get duds sent back, for example, from their customers.
Absolutely. And so what we've done is we've done that exact piece of work as you've described for a couple different manufacturers. And one of the really nice sites that we've worked with is a foundry, and they make engine blocks, and they're pouring iron into this sand mold, and they are kind of then shaking off the sand and taking that engine block and shipping it off to Germany. And in applying the work that we've done there, we've resulted in them not shipping any more defective engine blocks, right? And that really caught kind of Germany headquarters' attention. And so naturally the first thing they do is come kind of look through your office and work out what you're doing.
And what's the origin of this idea? You are by training an actuary.
Yes.
Your business partner is the techie. He's the AI guy. And you met at UCT. Daniel Schwarzkopf is your business partner here. He's the techie. You're the actuary. Where do you come up with the idea that, you know, what we're going to do with our lives is we're going to improve how factories work? It sounds, forgive me, a little dull.
It's exciting, but I won't dive into that, right? Our approach to market was very much, you know, we knew AI, we knew statistics, we knew data science, right? But we didn't know how we could create value in market, right? And so the way we started Data Profit was to say, we have the skill that we could perform in market, but we're going to consult and learn because we aren't experts. We're relatively young. We need to understand kind of where a market sees value, where it doesn't see value, and we're going to go out and offer our services as data scientists, right? And when we then kind of reflect on the projects that we've done, do we see that this is something that is meaningful to industry? And we've done work across a whole slew of industries in that regard.
Right? The first time you walked onto a factory floor and there are people with grease under their fingernails and wrinkles around their eyes and scorch marks from the furnaces on their foreheads, they look at these two fresh-faced university graduates and going, there is no way on earth that you know what I do here and you can't improve it. I know one out of 10 engine blocks we send to Germany might have a crack in them or whatever the case might be.
Yes.
But that's a really good global standard. So don't come here and tell me my job.
Yes. Yes.
Did you get that?
We get that a lot. Right. I still get quite a lot of that. It is a factor of you've got to kind of approach it saying you know your industry better than us. Absolutely. Mm. But what we know is artificial intelligence. What we know is data science.
But that stuff also scares people. So you're going to do what to gather the data? This mythical stuff. It's I suppose, like the old alchemists, to strive to try and turn lead into gold.
Yep.
You're taking the equivalent of lead and being able to convert it then into tangible, real information that is useful and can improve a process. And for most of us, we can't see it. We just don't understand what these billions of numbers are.
Yeah, and quite a nice way that we think about the work we've done is that all of that experienced operator, that guy who's run that machine, right? All of his experience actually reflects in the data of that machine. And all we're learning is from his own experience. It's just that small change when you notice that that machine was making a mistake, right? But it all reflects, and much like almost as a, when I use my cell phone, it learns about the words I use and tries to predict the next word. And so my cell phone comes to know me. The machines that these operators work with also reflect that data. And our AI almost learns from their experience. And kind of where it becomes really interesting is then it shares it with the next operator.
Now, if data is murky and hard to understand, AI is 10 times worse. Explain your version of AI to me, this artificial intelligence, this ability of you empowering a machine to make decisions or to interpret information.
So the way I like thinking about it, and this is kind of where a lot of my interest stems from, is for the longest time, the way we've worked is we've thought about writing an algorithm to solve a problem. But a lot of AI thinks about writing an algorithm that writes the algorithm that solves the problem. Right. And it's that kind of additional, that abstraction or that step away to say, actually, when we write that algorithm, we're following an algorithm of our own. And that's what we're trying to capture with AI.
Okay. So you're getting the machine to do the work, the real work.
So we're getting the machine to think for itself, right?
Doesn't that freak you out?
To some extent, it's interesting, right?
Of course.
Because like a large kind of class of algorithm we use is called artificial neural networks, which is just an attempt to replicate the biological neural networks, the way the brain works, right? And you run these algorithms and you get a result that you didn't think you'd achieve so quickly.
Give me an example.
Okay, sure. So there are a couple really interesting ones in media, right? And you'll hear about AI playing a game called Go, which is very computationally intense. It's got lots of different moves, and for a computer to try and solve that.
Go is like chess for uber nerds, right?
Go is exactly chess for uber nerds.
Chess has got 64 squares, but Go is almost in a cube. It's chess almost in a cube sort of format or something.
Yes, many more squares, many more different types of moves, right? That's your typical kind of. When you want to play, say, checkers with a computer, you can solve that problem with a computer. And you as a human can actually just write an equation or an algorithm and solve checkers. Right?
And chess, Garry Kasparov and Deep Blue, for the first time, a computer could beat the world's best chess player at that moment in time.
Yep.
And that changed the dynamic. Now we've taken it to this next level of Go.
Yes. But we as a human can't write that algorithm now. So we can't say this is
We're incapable of doing that.
But we can write the program that works out how to play Go by itself, right? And works out how to win Go by itself. And so what you have there is it's a computer program that doesn't go and learn from all the history books as to how to play Go. It is just given the rules and then plays against itself until it learns how to play Go well.
Can the same computer beat itself multiple times over? At what point does the learning cause the computer just to go and explode. Because that would be the human emotion.
Yes, yes. At some points, I'd imagine so, but the computer hasn't gone there yet. Right.
I'm fascinated by this, and I'm hoping you are too. His name is Franz Grenier. He is the co-founder of a business called Data Profit. That's the nerdy side of it. Now let's get into the business side of it. We'll do that in a second. Cape Town-based business, getting the attention of a global market and competing against similar businesses in other parts of the world. You would think a business like this would be really at home at Silicon Valley. So why are they not sitting in Silicon Valley? Why are they sitting in Cape Town running this business, which creates artificial intelligence to mine the huge amount of data, this information that people like Colin Cullis talk about, and you go, finally you're getting a real sense of what data is and what data can do and how it can be applied and used for improving your real world. In a moment. Co-founder of Data Profit, his name is Franz Cronier. Now tell me about the business case as to why you've got this very nerdy business based in Cape Town as opposed to Silicon Valley, which, you know, so many South Africans have taken their intellectual property and based themselves there. Elon Musk, Roelof Botha, Vinnie Lingham and others.
Certainly. So what we've found in working in South Africa is there's actually a large room, kind of a large amount of very good talent. And that talent isn't immediately by the likes of those big houses such as Facebook, Google and the likes. And that is the kind of competition that you as a startup in Silicon Valley run straight into, right? And so basing your kind of company down in Cape Town has afforded us to build a really, really good team, right? So that's been the first part of it. The second part of it is very much the nature of the work that we do can be based anywhere in the world. In fact, many of the computers that we compute or run our AI algorithms are, in fact, based in Ireland, right? Some are based in Virginia. And that we hear doesn't matter.
Are they your computers or are they computers that you rent? Is this the cloud?
This is the cloud.
So you can't, so if something breaks, you can't pop over to Ireland and open up a cupboard and go, oh, there's my computer, my screwdriver out and fix it.
No, they won't let us near those.
Okay. So you got, does connectivity matter? I mean, South Africa traditionally has had very slow bandwidth and very slow connectivity to the rest of the world. What is your connectivity like?
So, for the most part, kind of connectivity is broken into two parts. One is how much data and how quickly, right? And our biggest constraint just being in South Africa is just the quickness. But that quickness is really a thing that we face locally in our office, but our clients wouldn't because the computer is right next to them. But for us to communicate to Europe takes 150 milliseconds. And you'll notice that when
Whoa. You, from here, from sitting in Cape Town, you communicate to a computer sitting in Ireland, which is 10 hours flying away. You can do that communication there and back in 125 milliseconds.
150 milliseconds.
150 milliseconds. Yeah. Forgive me. I was speeding you up a little bit. That's faster than that.
It's fast, but you will notice it. Right. You'll definitely notice it when you're interacting with that computer.
So your competitor who's sitting in Ireland, say you've got a competitor sitting in Dublin doing what you do.
Yes.
And they're talking to the same computer. How fast are they communicating with their computer?
There it's less than 10 milliseconds. Right.
Even quicker than that. But what is the difference really?
The difference isn't large for us. Really, it's just an irritation factor that we face. But from our client perspective, it's one and the same because that computer is right next door to them, right? And whether their service provider is seated in Cape Town or they're seated in Ireland, it doesn't matter to them because their service is just the same.
Okay. So here you've got these computers. You sit in Cape Town. You've got great skills. You've got great talent. And also you've been able to, I suppose, break into market perhaps a little bit more easily in South Africa. There's less competition doing what you do. And if you then deal with a multinational in South Africa and have a successful interaction, you then get sped to the front of the queue at the multinational's head office, which has been your German experience.
Yes. And there's several things that I quite like reflecting on just as a startup coming out of South Africa and going into the international market. And it's things we've realized when we go and talk at an international level alongside competitors is kind of the nature of just starting in South Africa, running kind of a startup, you approach business in a slightly different mindset. And specifically, kind of the strongest contrast is if you're going to look at startups, say, in the US, a lot of their mindset is very much focused around building a product and then the business, right? And that's just the nature of their kind of investment market, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas in South Africa, a lot of what you see is these small companies start, they have to build a business first, right? And then, you know, build product.
How do you fund a business like this in South Africa? Because you're employing, what, 30 people?
30 people.
And these are highly skilled people. Yes. These are people with multiple degrees. They can take their skills. Their skills are highly transportable. Yes. So they might not demand a Silicon Valley wage. They might not demand a Silicon Valley wage, but they're certainly going to demand a professional wage for somebody at their level. It's an expensive operation to run.
Yes.
Even here in South Africa. So where does the money come from?
It is. And there are a set of local VCs. We've taken monies specifically from Knife Capital.
Knife Capital, that's a guy called Kiet van Zyl.
Kiet van Zyl, right. Kiet van Zyl and Andrew Beaumont, right. So they head up Knife Capital locally, and you know they've been really great to interact with. They share a similar vision to ourselves, whereby the local talent sitting in South Africa can, you know, perform or outperform on an international level, and certainly kind of taking these South African companies to an international market is something that, you know, the international market sees the value of.
So how hard is it to convince a guy like Kiet van Zyl at Knife Capital that you've got an idea that's different enough and makes it worth his while to put money into your venture?
It's not a simple thing. We certainly aren't alone, and we aren't the only people looking for this.
He's got a queue around the corner outside his office, I'm sure.
Yes. I think so. Our approach to this was, we've got a company that's produced a set of results. We've been running since 2014, right?
And did you self-fund in the beginning? You sold your shoes and your spare socks and started like a typical startup.
Precisely. I mean, again, kind of our approach to market was very much we're going to consult to market. And the nice thing about consulting is that it's, as a way to start a business, is you immediately start earning cash.
Yeah.
Right? As opposed to if you're going to make a product and invest time in writing this big piece of software, you're going to need cash on hand in order to fund yourself.
Okay, so you did the consulting thing,
yes.
But when it came to setting up the business,
yes.
Did you have a very clear path of what you then presented to Kiet, or was it evolved, and has he been a very tolerant partner in the process?
Certainly. So true to everything, you know, the only constant is change, so things certainly do, and they're very mindful of the set of changes that will occur, kind of the learnings that we'd have to apply and necessarily make changes to. When we kind of presented to Knife, we certainly kind of had quite a good idea as to where we're going, but that's definitely changed since, and they're very accepting of it.
So how then do you see this business evolving? Do you stay South African-based? Do you stay connected to South Africa? Do you export this business? Do you export your intellectual property? What's the big plan? What's a five-year plan, which in your world I know is an awfully long time, but give me a five-year vision.
Yeah, 5 years is a far away.
Okay, 15 minutes.
15 I'll minutes take 15 okay. minutes. 15 minutes is good. So certainly we see the work that we've done is applicable on a global scale. The manufacturing plants that are built down in South Africa follow the same pattern as the manufacturing plants built in Germany or the manufacturing plants in the US. And the work we've done here is definitely globally applicable. The company's vision is to become a global company, but always rest or have the talent out of South Africa. We are here because of that talent being available, and that's something we'd want to continue to support.
Okay, but that's sounding almost soft and fluffy, and not very AI, and not very techie, and not very cut and thrust and globally competitive. It's almost an ideological desire rather than a deep-seated business need.
So there's definitely a big business need in terms of just very good talent.
Yeah.
Right?
Where is the talent coming from? Because if you talk to somebody like a Chris Becker, who goes, we're not investing in expanding talent in South, and we're not sort of doing any development work in South Africa because we can get it better and cheaper in India. So why would we do it in South Africa? It just makes no business sense to do that.
Yeah, we're fortunately in an aspirational field, right? And a lot of what we find to be really good talent are those self-motivated people, right? And there's someone who's gone out and motivated doing almost a postgraduate in a, you know, mathematics or computer science, but they're doing it because they're really interested in it. And, they then kind of having completed it, turn to industry and say, well, where can I apply it best? Right. And that's fortunately kind of in the position that we find ourselves as we're one of those companies that are kind of moving very far forward with the existing AI theory and kind of pushing it to its limits and continuously kind of motivating and developing on novel ideas. And subsequently, given kind of our size, given the market itself, we're fortunate that a lot of very good talent turns to data profit to say, I'd like to bring
IQ of your average employee? Have you measured it?
I am not allowed to say. No, it's a mix of things that we really look for, and it's one of my key questions that I often pose candidates is, what do you do for fun? And the basis for that is if they've
built maths.
It's more than maths, right? It's AI. but the basis for that is if they are doing this for fun, they'd love doing it at work.
It's the fascinating and confusing and complex world of artificial intelligence being run out of Cape Town. His name is Frans Grenier. He's the co-founder of a South African business called Data Profit. I suspect we're going to see big things out of Data Profit into the future.